Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is the Shame-Free Zone, and I'm broadcasting from my cabin in the woods up here in the beautiful Tahoe National Forest. It's good to be back home. I've been broadcasting so much from around different remote locations up in Oregon and Northern California, and I think I did one show from my car. That was quite interesting. Anyway, very nice to be staying put for a little bit. We're going to be talking about polyamory, tantra, chakras. We might even talk about UFOs. I know. What do those things have to do with each other? Well, I have two illustrious guests tonight who are going to explain the details. We've got Janet Kirilesan, a woman who I have quoted many times in my own writings. I love what she has to say about sex and world peace. And her husband, Dr. Sasha Lesson, very accomplished man in his own right. I've got to say, I haven't actually quoted him, but I have worked with him. We've worked with clients, taken the clients to some emotional edges that are amazing, and then put all the pieces back together. So I love both these people very dearly, have a lot of respect for them. They hold up... They have an organization called the World Polyamory, and it's actually located in Hawaii. I mean, they're living in paradise. So World Polyamory Association, they actually have conferences both in Hawaii as well as they come sometimes come over here to Northern California, and that's usually when we work together. So Janet and Sasha, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Aloha. Thanks for having us.
Aloha.
You're great. So, you said you were having to do some travel. Are you teaching workshops somewhere?
Oh, we're just over in Oahu for a couple days visiting friends. So we're away from our peaceful Maui jungle. So you're going to have a little bit of wonderful Hawaii Honolulu background noises. Maybe they may not reach through to the phone, but it's lovely here, though. Oahu.
Well, we haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure we all are dying to. So nice and warm and tropical, I take it.
Yes, very nice, warm, and tropical, as usual.
Now, Sasha had mentioned talking about chakra tantra. And God, there are so many different types of tantra out there. Can you tell us what chakra tantra is? And we'll start with you, Sasha, and then give Janet a chance to tell us her version of that as well.
Thank you. All chakra tantras are eclectic type of tantra. We've taken the ancient tantra coming all back from the ETs that settled ancient Sumer right up to the present, and we've combined it with modern consciousness research and the best in humanistic psychology. And basically, we have a seven-category system based on centering. The first chakra or energy center, which is usually associated with the perineum, is the child or vulnerability center. And here we center ourselves between our inner child and the parts of us that protect our inner child, our defensive parts. And the next chakra is, of course, the sexual chakra. We teach women how to have ejaculatory orgasms and men how to have complete ejaculatory control. And centering in this chakra means being able to distinguish your personal sexuality from your impersonal sensuality. The third chakra, your power chakra, associated with the diaphragm area, has to do with your assertiveness, your boundary maintenance, your hero chakra, so to speak, and balancing in this thing means being able to follow or to lead and not being hung up on either one or the other, but being able to center yourself. And then there's the heart chakra, balance here. Centering means giving and taking. You don't want to overgive or you exhaust yourself and resent the person you're giving to, and you don't want to take too much or no one wants to relate to you. The next chakra is the throat chakra, and here we balance or center ourselves between maintaining silence if what we have to say isn't helpful, true, or kind, and speaking our authentic truth, and also we find it very important to sing our songs. The next chakra is the vision center. On the left side of your vision center is your logic, your intellect, and you center yourself between that, the right side, which is your intuition, and the hindbrain, which is the Akashic records and past life images and all that. And, of course, there's the crown chakra, which is your connection to spirit and other people. And above those seven chakras is the eighth chakra, the clown chakra. Above the crown chakra is the clown chakra. You got to be able to laugh at it all.
Wow. So, how did these, are these chakras different than chakras in general, or are they, you know, just your,
they are basically the same as different people have spoken about different chakras, but it's our way of bringing it together with the science of voice dialogue or centering, where rather than trying to trim off parts of yourself, we accept all parts and center ourselves and listen to the needs of the sub-selves or sub-personalities that are active at each chakra. The whole idea being centering yourself so that you're the chooser rather than automatically. Let's take the child chakra. Instead of defending your vulnerability automatically, or instead of being vulnerable automatically, if you're centered, you can appraise the situation from your fair witness, and you can actually decide how vulnerable it's appropriate and safe for you to be, or how defended you should be in each situation. The whole psychology that informs our system is one of being able to center yourself, to know that all your inner voices are of value to you, and in relationship, what you can't stand in your mate or what you overly admire is really your disowned personality parts. And if you can be assertive, or if she's assertive and you're not, or if you can emulate the wonderful traits that you wished you had but didn't have in your mate, that's where you can really learn from each other. So we really look at how we relate in terms of the chakras and what traits the other person has that we'd like to adopt as our own.
Interesting. Very interesting. So now, how do we access these chakras? What's the best way to do that? And Janet, I'm going to give you a chance to address this. How would you say is the best way to access the chakras?
Well, the chakra system is a diagnostic for how clear you are as a channel to your higher self and your multidimensional awareness. So, for example, say you have an issue in your chakras and it keeps you from your bliss and joy, your chakras will, you can identify where you have your blocks in your chakras and you can do some work on that. We identify these blocks by the system that we use of All Chakra Tantra, where we go through exercises on all the levels. So you might have some inner child issues, and that holds you back from your bliss in life. So I'm not really saying
well, okay,
very
so
well.
If,
go ahead.
Yeah,
you do.
So if it's a first chakra issue, what we're concerned with is that you don't treat your lover like your dad or your mother, which is how many relationships disintegrate. And so we go through an entire process of looking at the model that the parents gave us, seeing which of the traits that they modeled and inculcated in us we wish to keep, which we wish to modify, and which we wish to discard. That's for the first chakra. And you can tell right away when people are treating each other in parent-like and child-like ways that becomes sour. For the second chakra, we have a very clear diagnostic for women, which is we do yoni mapping, which is touching the inside of the vagina and seeing which areas are pleasurable and which are numb or painful. And where they're numb or painful, we ask the person to free associate, and they come up usually with a traumatic incident, which we have them relive and let the emotions out. And then we do a reprogramming where we say, well, let's do a play where there's a different program that gets inculcated in you that you can live from. And so then we give them this alternate program for their biocomputers and say, now when you're faced with a situation makes you want to go into the old program, we can give you the fact that you can have alternatives. To give a real concrete example, I was doing yoni massage on a person. I'm touching her inside, her yoni, and she said, I don't know why, but when you touch me there, I'm thinking when I was just a little girl, I was letting the water from the bathtub go on my clitoris, and my mom came in, and she saw what I was doing. And said, Joni, I wish you wouldn't touch yourself like that. And she just, that's all she said. Well, from that point on, my client says, I realize I've been furtive. I don't want to make any noise. I want to get it over quick, and I really don't enjoy sex. I worry so much about that. And so I said, well, what did you want to say to your mother? Said, Mom, you're spoiling my fun. She let her feelings out. I said, okay, let's do an accommodation process. I'll play your mom. Ah, honey, I see you found your pleasure button. Way cool. I'm going to close the door. You do it private. Have fun, baby. Well, if your mom had done that, how could you be? Well, I wouldn't be such in a hurry. Okay, so, Johnny, next time you realize that you're in a situation, you get the impulse, you've got to hurry up and be quiet. You remember that was what happened with your mom, and remember this little play that we did, and now you have a choice. You can either hurry up and be quiet, or you don't have to hurry up and make noise. And so we work like that. There's diagnostics for each of the systems that we work through, and we have a systematic program. All of which leads to people transcending their separate self-sense and feeling their oneness with their mates and their oneness with the universe, which is what Tantra is really about at its deepest level.
So you open your chakras one by one by examining your religious and cultural conditioning programming and how you limit yourself and hold yourself back through these different psycho-emotional technologies. And eventually you have a kundalini awakening. And if the kundalini flows from your base all the way through and out your crown, then you become conscious and aware, connected to source and higher awareness.
So I'm really fascinated with how you are helping women define trauma. So it sounds like you're talking about there being trauma to certain specific portions of the vagina can feel numb and other portions can be alive with sensation. Is that true, Sasha? Is that what you were indicating?
Yes, exactly. And what we do furthermore, I didn't really say the rest of it, I take my fingers from the place where the trauma was triggered, and I move back to a pleasurable place, and then I move my finger back to the trauma place, back and forth, until the place that was elicited the trauma, where there was no feeling or there was burning or there was pain, until that feels good too. And so by stimulus generalization, we make the entire inside of the vagina totally sensitive. And then we start a systematic rubbing of the urethral sponge, which rubs hormones into the urinary bladder and the urethra, and it comes out as an ejaculatory orgasm, which is usually accompanied by a vaginal and clitoral one too. And it's quite a lovely thing that many people haven't yet experienced. And Tantra, of course, that's one of the things you get.
Well, now, so let's back up for just a minute, Sasha, and I want to ask you some questions about what kind of processing the women do once they discover a place where it burns or it's numb. And the first thing that comes to their mind is usually the traumatic event. Is that true?
Not necessarily. It may not be anything traumatic at all. It may be something like, I'm thinking about those poor women in Afghanistan that have to wear body socks, or I'm thinking about when my best girlfriend ditched me and joined another clique, or the most common thing that people will associate, when I was 12, my dad was such a good friend, and then when I was 13 and became a young woman, he withdrew from me, and it broke my heart. And so it's just the somatization an association of whatever is up for the person. It may or may not be a traumatic incident. Also, pleasurable incidents get touched off too, but it's an exploration. Specific parts of your body hold specific kinds of memories. It's quite amazing what comes up. Janet can relate some stories about her particular experience, which is real dramatic.
Oh, Janet, please share your story with us.
Okay. Well, it's a long story, but I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. I had uncovered, I was orally raped when I was 4 years old, and I had totally suppressed the memory. I had no idea that that had ever happened to me. I didn't believe that someone could suppress a memory, and but it affected my life. I had a negative reaction to one of Sasha's dear friends, and I felt repulsed by him, and I was wanted to run away every time he was near. I had an aversion to oral sex. So when I met Sasha, we started doing an almost daily practice of yoni massage because I had a lot of trauma in my life. And so it's like the peeling the layers of an onion. It doesn't happen all at once. You uncover things, and it goes deeper and deeper the more you do this type of work. And so somewhere early on, though, in our relationship, I at one point felt like I said, oh, my, I have to go vomit. And so my girlfriend was there, and we were showing her what the process is about. And they both said, well, go ahead and vomit. So I ran into the bathroom, and as I was vomiting, this entire story came out about my oral rape I had when I was 4 years old. And so we continued to do more yoni exploration, and over time we uncovered different areas where sometimes you go into stories about your immediate life and the different issues, and it's really good to be facilitated and someone hold space while you emote. It doesn't necessarily have to be a full-blown story like mine was with the oral rape. Sometimes it's just emotions. Sometimes it's joy. It's bliss. Sometimes it's past life memories. And what I'm really accessing lately is archetypes. And it's a path to conscious evolution, to becoming aware. And actually, I think if you keep doing this, you can become enlightened and be aware of the whole cosmic story. And that's some of the things that we're uncovering now. Sasha and I have been doing this for 13 years now.
So in the accommodation process, her dad is a mailman, and I role-played the mailman, and I came back, leave my daughter alone, and I saved her so that she had this other program, that she isn't helpless, that she can speak up, that she doesn't have a lingam in her mouth preventing her from talking, and she can really assert herself.
So it's really important to interview people as much as you can beforehand to ask them how they would like to reprogram themselves. This is about reprogramming. And almost every human being alive has some kind of programming, and it makes them go through life unconscious and reactive to external stimuli. And this is a consciousness movement. We're helping people become aware of when they're in reaction to something rather than being in their center. And the genitals hold trauma on a cellular level. So we do both the yoni mapping, and there's some base chakra work for the men. It can all be pleasurable, but there's parts that when you're doing this type of work, you have to be aware that you're kind of playing with a loaded gun. And there's at any time you could, activate a live one, and you need to have the skills to work with someone who might have trauma in their genitals.
We train people to be able to be there as psychotherapists for this very, very intense kind of release that happens.
Well, this is going to be my other question to you. And, Sasha, you are a psychotherapist or a psychologist?
Yes, that's right. A psychotherapist, uh-huh.
Okay. So as a psychotherapist, that traditionally trauma like rape, like what Janet, especially a rape from the tender age of 4 years old, usually it's associated with a need to avoid being touched, avoid sexual contact, at least for a while. And I'm wondering, are your clients, is your ideal client somebody who has gone through extensive talk therapy before they get to this somatic experience, or what's your feeling on that?
Well, we don't go into the somatic experience until we've gotten a person really into their childhood, their whole life story. We go through their whole, everyone they've been involved with, what they learned. We go through clearing with mother, clearing with father, We do a huge, huge amount of therapy, preparing the person for the kind of thing that might come up, and helping them understand that whatever voices come out, whatever sub-personalities are released, particularly if they're powerful instinctual ones, like the desire to get hurt or very sexual desires, whatever comes out are okay, and that they can center themselves again and reinstate their protective voices, their social voices, their facades whenever they need to. There's no bad voices. There's no sub-selves that are beyond the pale. Even, say, an addictive sub-self, we find out what the person, how it does for the person, and see if we can addict them to water or yoga instead of booze or hard drugs. But so there's extensive psychotherapy built right into our Tantra program before people ever get to this somatic exploration. Otherwise, they're not necessarily prepared. It's certainly nothing you can just do in a weekend. It takes a lot of training to be able to be there for a person in this intense way.
Yes, I would think that. What are some of the risks? And Janet, I think you can answer this question probably best. What are some of the risks that you have to be conscious about?
You're talking about when doing this work with someone?
When actually doing this somatic work with people who may have been sexually traumatized at a young age.
Well, you just have to be aware that, you know, they can go anywhere. They may not go anywhere at first. It's their timing. So you have to be clear that you're not going in with your expectations of them achieving some kind of goal. And
okay.
It years for it to come out, or it might come out in, you know, one session. The most frequently happens is people come to us and they're just, we want to learn Tantra, and they're just all happy, happy going to join us. You know, and that's great. It's absolutely super great. However, those people, you know, sometimes I'd say about a quarter of those, there's somewhere in there, there's some trauma, and it comes out, it melts out into their relationship, kind of like an oozing wound. And the more that someone tries to suppress that, and that's what was happening in my life, I never had the space to address what was really going on for me. And I went through about 15 years of talk therapy with traditional psychologists, and we never got there. It wasn't until I, finally had what was almost like a near-death experience, because I was told I had 6 months to live. And I was very, very sick. I had lung disease. It wasn't until I decided to really live and seek the deep therapy that I needed to overcome what was happening to me, that I was feeling so sick and ill at ease and not wanting to live. My situation is probably not the typical one, but there are a great many people going through life with those types of wounds.
Yeah, one of the ways we deal with risk in the warm-up is we let the person know that if a part of them says, hey, don't go there, sweetheart, it's too heavy, what we say is, I'd like to talk to the part of you that says, don't go there, sweetheart, and part that says, don't go there, sweetheart, when did you first come into her life? What were the circumstances that brought you out? What are your concerns at the present? So as long as you do that, we honor any defense that comes out, and we really celebrate that sub-self, because it saved the person's integrity. Janet spaced out what happened. That allowed her to grow up in her family and not shatter the family and send her mother to jail and her father to insanity. And she helped her cope. And so that the ability to space out even is a good ability if you are the chooser and can choose when you're spacing out.
Yeah, I want to give you an example. We had a couple that came to us, and they wanted to learn how to have the woman ejaculate. And when they went off to do their homework, we gave them a basic class. Nothing major came out in their setup. But as soon as he started doing the massage with his wife and he got to her wrist, she remembered when she was tied up and thrown into her bathroom for 3 days and held prisoner by her first husband. And
oh,
she was on a deal that happened, and she didn't recall it until they were just going through the massage part, which was just touching her wrist. And so it's been an amazing path to be a therapist facilitating people, because you just don't know what you're going to get into when someone is coming just to, I mean, this happens to people that are just coming for, I want to, you know, stop an addiction, or I want to better my love life. And so it's, I think it's essential to just be prepared of what you're dealing with when you're talking about sexuality.
Yeah, and one of the basic things is, instead of saying, don't cry, honey, or don't be so angry, we say, let it out, really cry, crank up the anger, really let it out. And the hardest thing for a facilitator is if the anger, if you know, a husband and a wife are working, and the husband says, I'm really mad, and I'm mad at you, that's when he's got to really be there as a therapeutic presence. And we've trained him to do that. And he'll say, sock it to me, baby, I'm ready to hear you now. I was a louse then, and I'm here for you now.
Wow. So I like the way you guys are reprogramming these scripts that are running in people's heads that are so, that can be so debilitating. And so the somatic principle, Sasha, is the somatic principle really based on something I've heard before about muscle memory, or how does that work?
The same thing could happen if I were to reach my thumbs in people's mouths. As a matter of fact, there's a bioenergetic release at the back of the jaw. You could get all the times you were at the dentist. Rolfers who touch the body deeply in different places will find all kinds of traumas locked in specific memories. I actually had one where I had totally forgotten I was where I was riding my bike, and I had this whole jar of red ants I was going to put down my girlfriend's mailbox, and I was so contemplating with glee. I was 12 years old or something. I ran into a parked car, and the ants got all over me, a million red ants, and I had all these bumps all over me, and my crotch hurt, and I couldn't tell anybody, and I forgot about it for 20 years until I was Rolfed, and then it was like I was just back there. It's fascinating. Body memories.
Wow. Well, and it really is, and this becomes the thing that, you know, for people who can't understand, maybe they've tried all the positions, read all the books, taken all the workshops, and, you know, may consider themselves to be very accomplished and educated around sex and still have problems accessing certain sensations.
We regard the inability to have an ejaculatory orgasm as a diagnostic that there's probably trauma that it's probably associated with the yoni, because that's where the tissues are tensing up, and the person has to relax in order to have an ejaculatory orgasm. They have to say, it's okay if I release now, otherwise they hold it in. And it's not that always ejaculatory orgasms are held back by trauma. We follow what's called the PISSIT theory, that is, P is for permission. Yes, it's okay to have an ejaculatory orgasm. It's a natural, healthy function of the body. I is for information. Yes, every woman, even if she's had a hysterectomy, can have this kind of orgasm. Sensate focus is the S in PISSIT. That means how do you touch? How can you make your consciousness meet where you're being touched, wherever that is, however that is? And then it is intensive therapy, which is what we do. In the end, that we don't necessarily do intensive therapy if all it takes is permission or information.
Right. I also promised our listeners that we would talk a little bit about the, I don't know how to say this, the aliens, 2012?
Sure. Well, I'd be glad to talk to you about this. I actually have a PhD in anthropology from UCLA, so this is my other field.
Because I just put up on Facebook, orgasms and aliens, ?
here it is. 450,000 years ago, Homo sapiens, big 7-8 guys, but they were like us, came to Earth to get gold, because they needed gold to shield their planet. It was losing all its atmosphere, and this planet, Nibiru, comes by every 3,600 years, and it'll be here in 2012 or so. But in any case, these guys were mining in Africa, South Africa, and the miners revolted. There were about 600 of them, And their great scientist, Enki, said, look, there's these other humans that were here from an earlier settlement, Homo erectus. We'll put our genes on theirs. And so they did, and they made a slave race. That's us. And then as these guys, there's only a thousand of them at the very most, started fighting amongst each other. They would arm different groups of humans and so forth. And they knew that the flood was coming because they, every time Nibiru comes through, it makes this a lot of disturbance in our atmosphere, and that the Antarctic ice sheet was going to go into the South Seas and cause this great storm. And so Enki had his son. He kept making getting babies with all these hybrids. His son, Zeusutra, known to the West as Noah, built this submersible, and Nurnagal, one of Enki's sons, piloted to Mount Ararat. And then the surviving Anunnaki, these people from Nibiru, decided they would just divide up and be called gods and basically play the humans against each other and rule through humans. But one of them, particularly a brilliant female, Inanna, started all these pleasure temples, and she was given control of the Harappa and Mohenjo-Daro in the Indus Valley, and also in Uruk, which was in part of modern Ur. And she really made a study of how to use sexuality, and her great-grandfather, Anu, came down from Nibiru, and she was his girlfriend. And they did a lot of group sex and lots of really advanced tantric practices to raise everybody's consciousness. And we use these same techniques in our polyamorous lovemaking, where we get a group of people and we do sexual rituals, and we transcend our separate self-senses and really get to very, very powerful places where we channel wisdom from the Anunnaki. But Janet can tell you much more about that.
And Janet, you're on.
Okay, so ETs and orgasms. I'm bringing it home. That was a mouthful, honey. I loved it. So slow it down a little bit. Oh, let's see. What am I going to say? Where do I want to pick this up? Yes. So they had these ancient tantric practices which would help us humans. See, we were kind of held back in from our spiritual selves by those who wanted to keep us ignorant. And so she, Inanna, felt for her humans. She loved her humans, and she gave them a gift. And if you can activate all your chakras and activate your kundalini and have it go through your crown chakra and out to the higher consciousness, you basically are totally aware of the source, of the real God, because they were masking themselves as the gods, which later in time became monotheism, when one of the gods decided, I'm going to take control of the earth and I am the only God. So we went from the gods to monotheism. But she wanted to give humanity a gift of actually knowing what source is, which is the universal consciousness. And so when we go into an orgiastic state, which we can achieve in Tantra, where you're going, where you're being pleasured and you're going into pleasure and you're having one continuous orgasm for half hour to an hour at a time, you basically remember it all. You pierce the veil and you start becoming conscious and things flow through you, like your past life memories. Your awareness that you are more than just a single being. You are a multidimensional being that has a physical body, an etheric body, an astral body, and all the spiritual awareness. And it's phenomenal. It is a consciousness movement. And while most Americans and even most humans say, I want to have orgasms, what I was saying is that once you awaken your kundalini and you clear your chakras by doing your emotional family of origin work and religious and cultural conditioning and programming work, and you uncover where you're blocking yourself from your bliss and your higher awareness, and the energy goes out your crown chakra, you become aware of your multidimensional self, and that you are more than just your skin encapsulated self-sense, that you have a spiritual body, an astral body, an etheric body, that you're connected all the way to source. This actually is a path of enlightenment where you become conscious and aware There are things beyond this earth in this physical realm. And it's very magical and mystical. It's a religion, and it's also very orgasmic.
Okay, so basically, this is very much tied into the whole idea that Tantra and orgasms are a doorway to the divine. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right, what was it that you wanted to tie this into a polyamory ritual?
Well, just saying that the effect is multiplied when it isn't just two people connecting. A group, when there's a whole group and you've decided that your purpose is to is spiritual enlightenment, and that's what you're deliberately using your sexual energy as a gateway to. And I was just describing one that we like to do. It's called the Yoni Puja, where the women do the wave. They get their energy moving. They lie down with their head on the mattresses with their heads touching, and they're holding hands. And each one starts with a given partner, another woman or a man, who is pleasuring their yoni until they go into a state of bliss. And they usually all go off at the same time, and they have this experience for maybe an hour or so. And then the men rotate to the next woman until they go all the way around the circle. And by the time the evening's over, everybody's had a very, very spiritual experience.
Yes, because people in this circle get into a total orgiastic energy field. They create a grid that affects the morphogenic field, and these orgasmic rituals that you can have with, and these are people that have worked through their trauma. If you have people in a group you have to stop and work on individual trauma, it doesn't get to this level. So and this is just hypothetical. We haven't really found a group of a lot of people that aren't able to go here. But I've talked to some people about healing the planet, and it goes into a lot of stuff. But there's the negative energy fields that are being created using sexual energy by the Illuminati, which is a whole radio show in itself. And we can counteract these negative effects on the universe, on this planet, by having these loving tantric rituals where we basically affect all creation by this energy going up to the grid and transforming consciousness for all of humanity. There's like a critical mass level. We're not sure the exact number. Who talks about that? Rupert Sheldrake.
Yes.
and the 100 monkey theory. There's a critical mass level where we can reach this, and we can actually shift four-dimensional physicality and do the ascension process to, it's actually the fifth dimension, where humanity will claim our birthright as being citizens of the cosmos and the Federation of or the Council of Love and Light.
Yeah, and on the very practical level, there's a lot of research that shows that when there's a lot of sexual freedom and you don't use corporal punishment on your kids, the society is less violent and has less of a propensity to go to war. So our basic message of Tantra is make love and not war. That use sex to alleviate violence.
Right, and there's actually quite a few examples of cultures that are doing that, where it really does create a nonviolent atmosphere, whether you're talking about the bonobos in the Congo or the Muswa in China. We have some very tangible, real-life examples of that. Now, can you tell us a little bit then about what our listeners, if they wanted to do a polyamorous or just a tantric, ritual that would help to raise the energy level and create more peaceful vibes here on planet Earth, do you have any recommendation for them? And I'm going to ask first Janet and then Sasha. So Janet, how would you answer that question?
Well, one of the ones that we briefly touched on earlier is the Yoni Puja. Women are socialized to be givers. And so to balance the patriarchy, we want to make sure that the women are are getting enough orgasms and are into an orgasmic state, which actually the men can ride that Shakti wave and become aware of their orgasms and be able to have higher, better, longer, different types of orgasms. a typical American male kind of has this one, his one note song, you know, he has his ejaculation. But if he learns how to ride this wave of his beloved women or woman having orgasms, he can actually learn to have a multitude of different types of orgasms, especially if he masters his own ejaculation. So he's only ejaculating when he's at choice rather than, you know, just because of something happens. Go ahead.
Yeah, what we recommend is what we call the first tantra date, where a man or a woman invites another woman to a four-hour experience. She tells her what we're going to do, and it makes it it's going to be really nice. And we go through clearing with your parents. What kind of model did your parents have for you, and what do you accept? Tell me about your love life. What did you learn with each person? And I'm practicing active listening, so I'm saying to you whatever I hear you saying in my words, and you tell me if that's correct or not, and I empathize with you. And this is all available. You can trace it on our website, www.schooloftantra.com. But so that the person is after about 2 hours, they're really open to their feelings, and they know that their giver, be that man or woman, is not going to interrupt them, but is going to encourage them. And then we say, bathe and shower. Would you like a massage? Okay, then the person lies down. You give them a massage. Then you touch each one of their chakras, and you invoke the energy. May your child be present as you touch her base chakra. As you touch your yoni, may your Aphrodite be present. As you touch your diaphragm, may your hero be present, your heart, may your romantic be present. As you touch your throat, may your speaker be present, make any sounds that you want. Touching her vision center, may your visionary and intellect be present, and your spiritual side, as you touch the crown, be present. And then we start we ask permission each part of the ways. I'd like to touch your sacred area. Would you like that? If she says yes, you begin a gentle massage, just gently moving the clitoral hood a little bit, and the lips. And when you start to see the labia majora opening a bit, you say, "Sweetheart, I'd like to polish your pearl." If she says yes, I'd like that, then you put your mouth gently around her clitoral hood using lots of saliva and lick her yoni lips. And as she opens up after a bit, you say, "I'd like to put this finger, your ring finger, into your sacred area. Would you like that?" And if she says yes, you moisten your finger, and then you begin this systematic exploration of every centimeter of the inside of the yoni, as I described earlier, seeing where it feels good, remembering both if you remember that, and noticing if there's any places that where there's numbness or burning, and allowing the person to free associate, cathart, and reprogram those things. And once you've gotten through some of that, you start a systematic stroking, going from the cervix down to the orifice, and you're in essence stroking the internal parts of the clitoris as well as the urethral sponge. And when she gets to the point where she'll say something, "If you don't stop that, I'm going to urinate," I said, "No, you're not. It's something else, baby. Just release, let it go." And you put towels under her and say, "Let's see what happens." And, 2 to 6 or 8 ounces of clear or milky fluid squirting out, and at that point the man gives her her affirmation, whatever it is, your mortgage is paid, you've got your new puppy dog, or whatever it is she wants to hear. And then you just hold your hand there, you come up and just listen to the man, or the giver doesn't ask for any satisfaction of his own other than just being there, and just hold her and let her say whatever comes up. That's what we call the first tantric date, and that's a good place to start, and it's all outlined on our website, www.schooloftantra.com. Do take a look at it. We've got pictures of me taking Janet through this process.
That is just amazing. And are you recommending that for a first date?
That's
the first tantra date.
That's the first tantra date. There's a build up to it and a booklet that goes to it. Our book is going to be out shortly. It's called All Chakra Tantra, but right now, all the steps are there on that website, and that's it. But understand that before you do this part of the date, you are clearing with the parents. You're going through her list of lovers that she's been involved with. She's in a deeply emotional state, and the giver has proven that he or she can be there without giving advice, without saying don't cry, and can facilitate very, very deep, deep feelings that come up.
Wow. Wow. Absolutely amazing. Now, Sasha, I had heard you mention a name that I'm quite familiar with, and that was Rupert Sheldrake.
Oh, yeah, morphogenic field theory. Janet mentioned it, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Janet mentioned it. So I'm actually familiar with him because he has a book called Animals Who Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home. And he talks about, you know, how pets seem to be connected to their owners, how homing pigeons seem to be able to find their way, and we haven't been able to figure out how, and how wolves are able to conduct a hunt without being in line of sight or being able to smell each other. So he's one of my favorite scientists, actually, and I just wondered, could you tell us a little bit about how you draw from his work?
Well, in humanistic psychology, everybody reads Sheldrake, but the whole idea is that if consciousness, a certain minimal amount of people start behaving in a certain way that really works, it changes the whole field, that we are not really, our consciousness is not in, captive in these avatars that we're wearing, our bodies, but we're way, way bigger than that, way bigger than that. And so you get all kinds of things like, once humans know that the 4-minute mile can be beaten, and lots of them do it, it's like once you have the perception that there are extraterrestrials and that there are unidentified flying objects and not just the bullshit that the government puts out about what those are, then people start seeing flying saucers and they start contacting extraterrestrials. They are here and they've been here for a long time, and we are they. We're their descendants.
Yeah, and so once you become aware that, see, we have actually, this is the ET theory based on Zechariah Sitchin and other authors that are coming out, that we're looking at the archaeological digs, we're putting together all the anomalies. So this is the story that's emerging, but it ties in with what you were saying about the animals, is that we are more than our five senses. We have other capabilities, and if you look at the story about the Anunnaki, our DNA was turned off. And so we are able as souls to reactivate this DNA, which has these abilities, like you were talking about, of being psychic, aware, connected, and long-lived. But so these animals that Sheldrake was talking about are operating beyond their five senses, which we are all capable of doing that. Now, this is a self-policing society. So we're told, you can't do that. Or, you know, because that's not what's normal. And so people try to make it all normal. But what is normal? Normal is just some kind of abstract construct that they want to, because they're afraid. They're afraid of anything outside of the box. So once we become aware that we do have other capabilities and we examine these things that are happening in the animal world and around us, then we're aware that this is who we truly are as souls. Go ahead.
Wow. Go ahead, Sasha.
I think Janet really summarized it well, but it ultimately really tuning into animals is part of this larger, larger picture, which is respect for all consciousnesses and to really feel one another. The natural state of all human beings is loving oneness, and the same, I think, is true with all the animals. If you really let yourself look into their eyes and feel their souls, and you understand also that the planet itself is a creature, that is a beautiful creature, and that we are in a symbiotic relationship with all the consciousnesses in the terms of the holographic universe. The divine is in every single cell of everything in the universe, and we are in, there's a little Veronica and a little Janet, a little Sasha in every cell of the universe as well. And so if we really tune into that level of things, we realize that there is no other. There's just the one. And once we realize there's the one, then there's no need to war against ourselves because we are all of it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, certainly that is, Tantra really takes you there, doesn't it? Tantra Once you get connected to your breath and you start to realize that this entire universe is this one big orgasmic reality, and that your breath can connect you to everything.
That's really, and that's really what people are ultimately attracted to in Tantra, the obliteration of the feeling of separateness. Yes, you are distinct, but you're part of everything.
Yeah, and you can learn how to go back into and back and forth. You can go into your oneness with your beloved or your beloveds, and looking in each other's eyes and seeing into each other's souls, that helps you merge consciousness, and then you can step back out and be yourself. And so you go into this lovely dance of contact and withdrawal, and the process helps you evolve and become more conscious.
So now you mentioned something about the Akashic records. And, you know, everybody has their own little spin on that. Can you tell the listeners what that means to you and how it ties into Tantra?
Okay. I'm a past life therapist, so that's partly my bias. But we find that almost anybody, if I say, imagine in another time, in a place, wearing another body, and start with your feet. What are they like? And describe them. And if something is, and what's your body like? And put yourself in a context. Something is about to happen. And pretty soon people will get totally into a story which feels very, very real to them. And and has huge bearing on this life. And I and other therapists have found that when they'll start, a person will start reliving a, call it a fantasy, a past life story, or an actual access, they'll start, the woman will say, Mongol is raping me, and I hate you, you beast. And she'll yell that out, and suddenly it's not just, I hate you, you beast, the Mongol. Oh, my gosh, it's my uncle or my cousin. And suddenly we have the memory, so that we therapists have been totally fascinated by the use of past life as a way of uncovering this life. But then as I started studying with Stan Grof for many, many years, we started looking at people speaking languages that they never had contact with, being able to identify artifacts and all kinds of information that they had absolutely no way of knowing. And it was, where would this stuff come from? It was there. It was, they were able to access things like, I'm a mountain lion. I'm hungry in the back of my neck. What? You're hungry in the back of your neck? We look it up and we find out that's how mountain lions experience their hunger. And we find that all this information is there, and that we can, by hypnosis, and by meditation, by psychoactive entheogens, actually start to access these deeper, deeper realms. And there's absolutely no place in the universe that we can't go once we stop being afraid to travel.
Wow. Utterly fascinating. So now, what's your take on that? Do you think that people are accessing this big record, out into basically, so it's like they have a memory, but they didn't actually live it? Or do you think people actually have past lives?
I think they actually have past lives, in as much as that we have all lived all the lives. If five people say that I was Abraham Lincoln, four of them ain't lying. They're just identifying with those part of the Abraham Lincoln experience that is most relevant to them and their current existence. When a person does a past life, we have them go to the death, see what happens to the body, go to the bardo or the interlife and bring before them those whom they've harmed and those who harmed them, have a discussion, see what their karmic relationship with those people in the past life were and who is representing them in the current life. And then we have their guides come to them and do a new karmic contract, so they're no longer bound by this repetitive pattern that's been troubling them, and that's why they came to therapy. This stuff is all there, and there's been so much documentation. Stevenson took all these little Indian kids. I was born in some other village, and this is what my mother looked like. My father took these kids back, and sure enough, there it was. I have no doubt but that there's reincarnation that occurs. The evidence is overwhelming.
Right. And the Akashic Records, I think, is a interdimensional place where people can access, or beings of all types can access to experience these other lives that other beings have led. There's a lot of people that are writing about it, and they're accessing that information through channeling and stories that are emerging. And the UFO field, and people are converging on this concept. And so, you know, I'm coming to the conclusion and believing it, for lack of a better word, that there is a place where you can actually access other memories of other people's lives. But we all have our own story. We have our story going back to source, to the very first thought. And I was listening to George Vassilias. I'll have to get the right spelling. He's from Australia. And basically he was saying that this is the furthest expansion from source. We have expanded all the way out to the continuum of light and dark on the deepest level, third dimensional physicality, the material realm. And we have basically experienced killing and being killed. That was what we kept coming down from the higher level of consciousness and exhausting. At first we felt separate from each other and we didn't like each other. And so the grand experiment was coming down to this level where we can kill each other and we don't really die as souls. We just experience killed and being killed. And now, so that was expansion down to the lowest level. Now we are approaching 2012, and all these things that have happened to all these beings, we're talking about billions and trillions of years on different planets, and the final story is down here on good old Terra Firma and Gaia. Now it's all contracting, and it's going back into contraction and going back to source. So we're living at these incredible times, and so apparently in 2012, December 21st, 2012, this experiment is over, and there's a number of people that are writing it, and I don't know if it's true or not, but we're certainly, most of us that are listening here are going to be alive to see this. And is it the horse before the cart phenomena? Will our believing it or addressing it cause it to happen, or is it something that's been has already happened and there's nothing we can do about it? We don't know if it's fate or destiny or going to happen or not, but it certainly is an interesting concept, and there's a lot of good writers out there talking about it, and it's worth exploring and seeing what's going to happen.
So, okay, I've got a final question for both of you. And first I'm going to ask Sasha, what is going to happen in 2012?
In 2012, in all probability, there's going to be huge solar flares as Nibiru and its associated planets and comets and satellites come near to the Earth. When there's huge, this is going to knock out all of the satellites that we have there that we depend upon so much for communication and transportation, and so that's going to be a vast mechanical problem for everyone here on Earth. And Nibiru has passed through every 3,600 years, and Earth comes out okay, even though there's often disasters that occur. But there's going to be some very, very difficult times, because when you have this, the magnetic poles may well shift. Our scientists know full well what's going to happen. They're just keeping the information from the population because they want to make sure that they're okay.
From my perspective, what I'm getting is Earth is going to give birth to her new fifth-dimensional self. She has been the home for this grand experiment for all these beings, light and dark, for billions of years, and now she's done. She's finished. So those who have not prepared will probably go on to death, which means they'll go on to reincarnation and other third-dimensional planets, which is actually a closed system of third and fourth, meaning life is third dimension and fourth is where you go when you die in the spirit realm, and then you come back into the physical realm as life. So there's going to be a great part of beings that will just continue, but the Earth will no longer be available. So they will be transported or reincarnating on different planets. But there are a number of people that are going to be going with the Earth into fifth dimensional consciousness and awareness. And so this is going to accelerate. We're doing it right now here, but 2011, 2012, this process of awakening is going to happen because a lot of people have programming that's blocking them from who they really are. And those barriers are coming down en masse, and you're going to see that we are in this incredible times where you're going to see people just all over going, I've been in a dream, and the cloud has lifted, and what has been going on, and oh my God, and you're going to see this phenomenon in the next 2 years, like it's the most amazing thing that's happening. There's so many like YouTubes, you can just go on there and look at this, and the whole process of watching everybody else waking up helps you wake up. And then it's like the pond, the pebble in the pond. It just ripples to every shore. And it's just like Sheldrick said, we're affecting the morphogenic field, and we are waking up. We're tired of it. We're tired of being corporate economic slaves. So this meltdown that's happening in our society is actually the catalyst for our expansion into this greater awareness.
Yeah, I think that the Anunnaki are going to be returning, and they're not going to let the coalition of Greys and Illuminati continue to dominate the planet, that's for sure.
And also, the mirror will be...
You both have very positive takes on the future then.
Yes, I think it's very positive. I think no matter where you are in the continuum, whether you remain unconscious or whether you wake up, you're going to exist. I think that we do exist no matter what, that life and death is just something that we do to entertain ourselves. It's divine play, it's Leela.
It's something we do to entertain ourselves.
Well, you guys
are great, and I can't believe it. I can't believe that you connected the chakra and the tantra with the aliens. You're amazing. I love you both. Tell our listeners very quickly how they can contact you. I already posted your website up on Facebook, but let's tell the listeners how they can contact you and come to one of your delightful workshops.
We also have worldpolyamoryassociation.com. We are working on a new website, templeoftantra.org. We have the first 501c3 nonprofit tantra temple in the U.S., which now has paved the way for everybody out there. Go get your 501c3 tantra temples, because it's a category that is now recognized. So you can call us, 808-244-4921. I'd love to talk to anybody who wants to talk to me when I have time. If I don't answer, give me a good number, and I'll call you back.
Okay, great. Thank you, Janet and Sasha. Hope to see you soon. Maybe I'll have to fly out to Maui.
All right. See ya.
Aloha. Thanks, guys. And back to my listeners now, just to let you know that tonight we didn't do so much on Facebook. Hopefully I will write that wrong next week. We are going to be having a very interesting topic next week. We will be talking to Pamela Chabak. Pamela Chabak is going to be talking about passages into womanhood. So we're going to be talking about menstrual health, and this is a ritual, a very important ritual that's been neglected for a few hundred years, that's all. And it's something that the women of planet Earth really need to reconnect with. So I hope you'll tune in next Monday. I am going to be staying close to home here for a couple of weeks, so if you want to contact me for a telephone session, that's probably the best, unless you happen to live in the Grass Valley, Nevada City area, perhaps Auburn or Roseville. I'll be coming out to some of those areas. Could do some house calls to Sacramento, Roseville, or Auburn on various days. And if not, you can come to my office, which is in Nevada City. Okay? Either way, feel free to text me or call me at 415-407-2932, 415-407-2932. And as always, you can also reach me on my toll-free number, which is 888-903-0050. That's 888-903-0050. That's it for the Shame-Free Zone. Speak to you next Monday. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. dreams at the end. Never let me discover it there.